Journalismus, der Frieden ermöglicht. Das ist Media for Peace, ein Podcast des Media Lab Bayern.
Hallo beim Podcast, mein Name ist Sabrina Harper, ich bin die Host von Media for Peace. Hier sprechen wir über friedensfördernden Journalismus mit dem Fokus auf die Länder Afghanistan und den Libanon. Also Länder, die konfliktbehaftet sind, und wir versuchen über Ideen zu reden, die deeskalierend wirken und wie journalistische Arbeit in Krisengebieten gestaltet werden kann. Heute geht es um die Medienlandschaft in Afghanistan. Unter anderem darum, wie durch Satelliten-TV ein Zugang zur freien Presse in Afghanistan möglich ist. Dazu spreche ich mit dem Journalisten Lotfullah Nayafizada. Er hat 2021, also als die Taliban die Macht in Afghanistan übernommen haben, mit weiteren Medienschaffenden den TV-Sender AMU TV gegründet. Die Macher und Macherinnen von AMU TV sitzen sowohl in Afghanistan als auch in Europa, den USA, Kanada und weiteren Ländern. Mit Lotfullah spreche ich über den aktuellen Status quo von afghanischen Medienschaffenden, den Zugang zu Informationen und Bildung und darüber, welche Bedeutung die freie Presse für das Land hat.
Media for Peace. Insights.
Hello Lotfullah, welcome to the Media for Peace podcast.
Thank you, Sabrina. So good to be with you.
I already described AMU TV a bit in German, but it would be great if you can give us a little insight about what AMU TV is all about and how can we imagine AMU TV?
It's a small television channel in size, but a pretty big TV channel when it comes to mission and objectives. This is what decided to establish after the fall of Kabul into the Taliban's hands and departure of so many Afghan journalists from Afghanistan since 2021. So AMU TV was founded, I would say, before the first anniversary of the fall of Kabul. So that was a very quick turnaround. And it's home for about, I would say, around 50 journalists, content producers, who are not only doing news and current affairs, but also music, cultural shows, dubbing soap operas, anything that is banned in Afghanistan. And why television? It's because we found a loophole that, okay, there are journalists inside the country who can send information. There are journalists outside the country who can process the information. And then how are we going to send it back to the people inside the country? And that was going to happen through satellite television, because that's where the Taliban cannot censor. That's where Taliban cannot control. And that's where most Afghans watch their TV content anyway. So that was a wonderful opportunity for us to set up AMU TV and serve the Afghan people the way we used to when we were at Kabul.
Did AMU TV exist before the Taliban were in power? Or what kind of media was in Afghanistan before?
AMU TV did not exist before the Taliban returned to power. There's a new project. There's a new initiative. We, as journalists, we were all in Afghanistan until 2.5 years ago. We were working for different media outlets. And after the Taliban takeover, a lot of us found ourselves overseas for a number of reasons, but primarily because of Taliban's animosity with the free press. And we thought that, okay, now that we are in Germany, we're in France, we're in Canada, US, we're in Pakistan, we're in Iran, we're in so many other countries in the region and beyond, journalism was and is the only thing that we know. So I thought, together with my colleagues, that maybe a television channel like AMU TV is what these journalists need, rather than spending all their time on social media, spreading or contributing to disinformation and misinformation, being a victim of toxic information. So it's good to sort of bring all these talents together and enable them to serve the same people that they have used to serve through other platforms in the past. Because AMU is small, but these individuals who work with AMU or AMU are big names. And they used to run TV channels in Afghanistan. They used to be the top news anchors in Afghanistan. They used to be the top investigative reporters in Afghanistan. They used to be the top sort of entertainment program celebrities in Afghanistan. So they all have come together at a new home named Omu.
Did they come together by themselves, or how can I imagine that? Or was there a lot fuller starting a Zoom call with all of those top journalists and trying to get them together? How can I imagine that? How was Omu TV and all those journalists with it born?
We, so the two of us, my dear friend and colleague Sami Mahdi and I, who used to work together in Afghanistan in different capacities, we were the ones who started our initial conversations after August 2021. And by August 2022, we had a media outlet called Omu up and running. And within 8 months after that, on the 3rd of May 2023, Omu was on satellite 24/7. News, general news and entertainment channel, broadcasting from primarily from the U.S., but also with offices in the region. So that's how it started. Sami Mahdi is the editor-in-chief. He runs the day-to-day content production, and I help him from my basement in Toronto. He's the one who is based in the U.S., where our studio is in the Washington, D.C. area. You know, I have a sort of a more a support role, and help them and help him and help the organization wherever I can, however I can, given how limited our abilities are now that we're abroad. I've intentionally avoided the word exile, as you might have noticed. It sounds very political. I understand that we might be exiled. This is probably the best way to describe ourselves. But you know, we were journalists. We were journalists. We are journalists. Over politicization of media, in our case, is not serving the industry, is not serving journalism, in my view.
I understand. So what term do you prefer? Just journalists?
So Omu is, so people call me, okay, are you based inside the country or outside the country? Are you domestic? Are you exile? Are you foreign? You know, we're a hybrid outlet, I would say.
What term do you prefer if you don't like exile journalists? What else do you want people to call journalists?
Well, I mean journalists are journalists. That is the best title for any journalist, especially even for us who have run newsrooms and, you know, being managers and producers. Your ultimate lifetime title is journalist, is a reporter, and that's who you are. No matter if you're in Munich or in Toronto, right? Today's reality and with the technology and everything.
I respect that, yes. Talking about journalists, maybe journalists working from abroad, probably. But I never thought about being so political about the word exile. But that's a point. I feel you. Thank you very much for sharing this. So, as you already mentioned, you are hybrid. There are journalists all over the world and also in Afghanistan that are doing some stories and they're sending them to you. Is this right?
Yes. So we have journalists inside the country. A lot of them, we're trying to empower, enable those journalists on the ground to make sure they are the ones who decide what is the story around them and what story should be produced and brought to the Afghan people. And then because of the censorship inside Afghanistan applied primarily on local media, then they send it to international or media outlets based overseas, such as Omu, and then they send it to us. Then we have editors starting from the immediate neighborhood in countries like Pakistan and Turkey and Iran. And then also in the broader sort of that region, including Europe. And then the person who reads the news is based in the U.S. in the D.C. area. So a journalist is sending information from Afghanistan. An editor is, the head of news is based in Paris. the video editor is based in, I don't know, Peshawar maybe, or Islamabad. The one who is editing the text is in Turkey. The one who is approving the news, the editor, is maybe in Virginia. And the one who is reading it is in our studio. So it's a collaborative approach. And sometimes it's very hard for us to say that, you know, we are sort of based and headquartered in one region. It's such a collaborative effort. It's not by design, because that's where we ended up as refugees. We did not choose where to go. You know, we were sent to places, countries that accepted journalists after the Taliban takeover. But we're just using the opportunity. We're basically using, given the circumstances, we're using it for the benefit of our profession to serve the Afghan audience.
What about the people that deliver the stories, the people that are living in Afghanistan? Aren't they threatened? Aren't they in danger or something if they do what they do?
They are. That's why we are having this zigzag operation style in order to sort of bypass the Taliban firewall. So these journalists, most of them are anonymous. Most of them are a threat for the Taliban. And the Taliban are after them. Some of them have been intimidated and threatened and detained in the past year as well. But the flow of information has not stopped. That's where it gives us a lot of hope. That's why it's very hopeful for us to sort of wake up every day and continue. So there are so many journalists inside the country. And for one vacancy, I've said it before, for one vacancy that we announced a few months ago, we received 500 applications. And then we asked our colleagues to stop announcing job openings, because it's heartbreaking to see so many people who would like to work for you, but then you are not able to hire them. But at the same time, it's also very heartwarming to see that there are so many journalists inside that country. Compare it to any other suppressed countries, compare it to North Korea, compare it to Iran maybe, and Myanmar and other places where you may not have such an enormous response to one job application.
Why do you think are there so many journalists still working in Afghanistan? Why didn't it stop?
Because of the history, because of the foundation. So 20 years of free press in that country was a very serious investment in the Afghan society. And that transformed the Afghan society in a way that people are not willing to give up. We're talking about 10,000 journalists and media professionals in Afghanistan. Maybe a few thousand of them, 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 max have left. There are still thousands of journalists in that country. There are still 1,000 journalists graduating from journalism schools every year in Afghanistan. They need jobs. It's a very attractive profession in Afghanistan. Still, the Taliban hate that. Yes, they have stopped girls from going to journalism schools. They are trying to change the curricula. They are trying to re-engineer the whole society, including the way information is being processed. Because for theocratic states, such as in Afghanistan, there is no belief in checks and balances. Things are very simple, particularly in the space of information. That is seen as the tool for governance. So media is to promote governments. Media is to serve the interests of the ruling party. And that's why the Taliban hate free press. Yes, they benefited a lot from it when they were an insurgent group in the past 20 years. But they were speaking against the same journalists that they used to work with for so many years. And they see them as enemies right now. So for the Taliban, it's very difficult to, as an ideology, to accept another power representing this, and their views, the people, to keep them accountable, to hold them accountable. And that's why they're not a they were speaking against, you know, the same journalists, they benefited enormously as an insurgent group.
So you mentioned they changed the curriculum and only men are allowed to learn a profession like journalism. If I go to the university to study journalism, oh, I won't go because I'm female. If I am a man and I go to the university to learn more about journalism at the university in Afghanistan, they now teaching me journalism has to serve the Taliban, or how can I imagine being at the university in Afghanistan studying journalism? How can I imagine that? Because I'm surprised that on one hand, you can still study journalism. And on the other hand, as you say, the Taliban have a really strict thing when it comes to journalism. So,
right. Well, at the moment, for girls, higher education is banned, no matter what you want to study. But even before that ban, journalism was one of the professions, such as engineering, maybe, and agriculture, that they decided that this is not meant for girls. And for curriculum, yes, they have altered the curriculum in order to allow more Islamic education. But don't forget that people adapt according to the environment that's there. As they say, if you want to change a person, change the environment. So the environment at this stage is so restricted that you can't even call Taliban the Taliban. You have to call them the Islamic Emirate. And now they're asking for titles for their leaders. And of course, there is a long list of topics that you can't cover or can hardly cover when it comes to security, human rights, women issues, even education. Forget about protest, covering protests or covering Daesh attacks and all of that. So they are adding more religious topics in every school, being university as well as school. And that is all, my fear is that long term, this will affect the quality of education. And we have already seen it. And that's why part of the job for us is to work with journalists, not only to get information from Afghanistan, but also train them on the job. By the way, that's how we got trained. That's how we sort of, for any young population like the one in Afghanistan, when you find the talents, then you train them on the job. And that's the story of the whole industry in Afghanistan.
What part of training on a job or for journalists in Afghanistan do play fake pictures, fake stories, maybe AI, fake news? I think that's a big, big challenge. How do you deliver that what you are saying is the truth?
Right. So for now, I think objective look at incidents that happen around you is probably the most important challenge. Second is access to information, because the Taliban hardly engage with media. They only engage when they have things to say. Also, yes, there's a lot of narratives coming out of that country. There's multiple sides to this, to every single story. So fake news and misinformation is playing a significant role in the Afghan media space. And hopefully with the help of technology, we will be able to address that. I think one picture that the Taliban posted from a gathering in Kandahar was identified by one of the leading newspapers in Afghanistan that's now operating from the U.S., that picture was not from the recent Eid prayers, that was from 2018. So they were exposed that the picture that they use, you know, was fake, was not fresh, was not new, right? So that media outlet is based in the U.S. It's impossible for media outlets based in Kandahar and Kabul to do things like that. And yes, that is something that, you know, hopefully technology will allow us to verify, to double check. But technology will have its own limitations when it comes to access to information, given that this is such a closed, you know, space.
And how do you train people on the job when they're working for AMU TV to be aware of misinformation or fake news?
We have senior journalists as editors and as producers who liaise with these journalists and work with them on a daily basis to make sure they ask the fundamental journalistic questions about every single story before they see something, before they file something. So critical thinking is probably your sort of first go-to question and thing to do. And that will allow a space for you to have a serious conversation for that journalist, with that journalist to, you know, file that story. Yeah, so sometimes we question them that if somebody says this, it doesn't mean this is true, right? They say it in journalism, that if somebody says it's raining outside and somebody else says that it does not, your job is not to basically say that, you know, person A said it's raining, person B said it's not raining. Your job is to basically go outside and check if it's raining or not. So this is, I think, where our job is standing at the moment to make sure we're not only amplifying a Taliban narrative and an anti-Taliban narrative, we're basically trying to identify what the truth is.
It sounds a little bit silly, but I'm really, really interested in your answer. What does free press mean to Afghanistan people? Why is it so important? And why do they consume free press that much? You have a lot of viewers of AMO TV. How much people watch AMO TV?
Well, satellite television is accessible to about 19, 20 million people in Afghanistan. And that is more than half of the society. But that's also a very reserved figure. So a lot of Afghan people watch television and consume content online, although the Taliban have restricted websites and the websites that they don't like. But they don't have the ability to, at this stage, not yet, to limit access to satellite TV.
And why is free press so important?
Why free press is so important is simply because of two reasons. One, 20 years of free press in Afghanistan created a culture. It was a fundamental right for the Afghan people to have the right to speak up, express their views, challenge the authorities. And according to RSF index and other measures, Afghanistan had the freest press in the entire region. We have better free press compared to any of our immediate and far neighborhood. So that culture, it became a habit. And second, because we had such a young population, so people were born with that culture. So we're now talking about 2/3 of the Afghan people under the age of 25. So 60-70% of the Afghan people know nothing but free press. They don't have that history of living under suppressed regimes and adapting themselves to a more restrictive societies. So that's why they want to consume what they used to consume, be it free press, be it, of course, entertainment content, foreign content. And the Taliban, to their benefit, they have to serve their benefits and long-term interests and ensure their survival. They have attacked this from day one. They have banned foreign content. They have banned music. They have banned objective journalism. They have banned female reporters from covering most of Taliban in press conferences. They have banned a female journalist interviewing a man. They have banned male journalists interviewing female guests. So the list is very long. But this is not what the Afghan people used to have and used to sort of deal with. And that's why free press is very, very important.
The situation is different because if people watch satellite TV and consume free press, they put themselves in danger. Do Taliban hunt those people down if they consume free press?
No. How can the Taliban go to every single house and check what people, you know, watch? And it's not there, or at least safely I can say it's not there yet. I don't see directions and directives from the Taliban saying what channels people should watch and what channels people shouldn't watch. I still see a lot of people doing Instagram stories where they listen to music in their cars and girls doing parties the way, of course, the Taliban don't want them to do. People, of course, you know, watch every channel that's available, it's accessible. It's not that the Taliban go to every single house. They don't have the bandwidth to do that. maybe even they watch, they benefit, you know, from free press because they want to know what's happening, right? These Taliban groups, they have come from different parts of the country and now they share a government, but they can hardly interact within each other. So we've had stories in the past where one faction of the Taliban called us and said that, you know, this is a story which is literally against the other faction of the Taliban. So we've had examples like that as well.
So they have things they don't like, but they also use all the channels that are possible to tell the Taliban, to try to tell their stories, try to tell their narratives. And sometimes it works in free press and sometimes not.
Yes.
Because it's really complex for me to understand how it works, because on the one side, it's totally against free press. And on the other side, I wouldn't say they accept it, but they just say, okay, it's there and we're trying how we can use it or not. So it's really complex.
I think the Taliban, as an insurgent group now running government, now in power, they are in favor of anything that serves their interests to make sure they remain in power. And one big question that they have is how to deal with the narrative, because that is their new battleground, as they have identified themselves. How to make sure they don't deal with mass uprising. Yes, people are tired of war in Afghanistan, but slowly people are expecting more service delivery. People are expecting food. People are expecting jobs. And the Taliban, given how isolated and limited their resources are, it's very difficult for them to provide that. So free press for them is a tool to use in their interest whenever they can. But at the same time, of course, they are against any narrative that is holding them accountable is something that they don't like.
If you could make a wish, what impact do you wish for having a free press in Afghanistan? So what should be the result at the end? Do you hope to create more information? Do you hope to create more maybe peace between the parties? What do you wish for? What is in your imagination? What would be the big goal to reach with AMO TV or with free press in general?
We want the Afghan people to remain informed and engaged. And their hard-won achievements are not gone overnight. A new ruler in town, we should not allow the Afghan people to be deprived from what they think is representing their values and their lives and their existence. So, and defines them, basically. We want to make sure the Afghan people are not isolated from the rest of the world. We want to make sure that in case there is a post-Taliban Afghanistan one day, the Afghan people don't wake up from 5, 10, 20 years of sleep and not knowing what is happening around them, that they had to catch up. So it's like a bloodline, a lifeline, empowering the Afghan people through fair, balanced, impartial journalism and information. Maybe because that's also our mission as well as our responsibility.
On AMO TV, there are also not just politics and stuff, there are also entertainment. Why do you play entertainment things on AMO TV? Why is it important for the people?
Because, as I said earlier, AMO TV is responding to a vacuum, to a void. And that void is created by the Taliban. And in the media field, as much as objective journalism is affected, music production is also affected. Social programs, entertainment programs are also affected. We want normalcy, an ideal Afghan society, to be seen on the TV screens. All of a sudden, we have to include music production, soap opera, dubbing, and entertainment shows as ingredients of free press. And that is very unique. That just becomes a journalistic responsibility as well. But I think that's what a lot of Afghan people used to consume. And we want to make sure they are served the same way that they were served in the past 20 years. I must say, Omo TV is a very small player. It's not only about me or my colleagues or Omo TV, it's about the entire Afghan media, including those who are inside the country. Yes, they have limitations, but they are doing a fantastic job. So I would be unfair not to recognize the work of the entire Afghan media. This is a collaborative approach. We have a big mission. My mission is not to make only one media outlet successful. Our mission is to keep a society alive. And that can only happen through collaborative approaches, collaborative work. That can only happen if the entire media sector, you know, come together and work together.
And when it comes to finances, you said you're a small player and you have journalists all over the world. How is Omo TV financed?
We are financed through NGOs, in the US, NGOs in Europe. And these NGOs are supporting organizations like Omo, not only in Afghanistan, but throughout the world. Omo TV is not the only Afghan media that's financed through these organizations. In Afghanistan, there are so many outlets. We were, I think, lucky and successful in some initial fundraising in the very early days of Omo to make sure we're on air, at least for now. I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. It's very difficult for us to predict, but this is what we've achieved.
I just did an episode about organizations and what part they play in supporting free press and stuff. So that's really interesting to me. Do you think that journalists or the free press are also in charge of trying to building a peaceful surrounding in the city or support dialogues? What do you think about that?
Yes, I think media is a platform for dialogue, for exchange of views. It's not a platform to promote a certain viewpoint, but it's a platform for different viewpoints to come together. And then this is for consumers, which is the people, to decide and make their own judgments. That's what I think the power of information is all about, to enable you to make their own decisions. So empowering people through information can happen through dialogue. Bringing one people, one view on a channel, that is PR, maybe. That is not journalism. That is campaign. That is, in extreme cases, propaganda. But allowing people from different walks of life to interact is what I think the fundamental role of media is. And it's much more needed in societies like ours, because certain groups of the Afghan society is marginalized by state actors. So non-state actors, such as media, is playing a critical role to allow those diverse views to engage and interact. A lot of that has happened in polarized societies, such as in Afghanistan. You see also how toxic that diversity can be. But then the role of media is to use the platform in a way that is fairly distributed and all voices are heard equally. And so the people can make, you know, the right judgment calls for their lives.
Thank you very much. I say thank you for giving us a really personal and really direct way to look inside in the Afghanistan Free Press. And thank you very much for sharing your thoughts. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Sabrina. Thank you for your time and great to talk to you.
Wer regelmäßig diesen Podcast hört, hat gemerkt, dass einige Themen, die wir bereits in der Theorie aufgegriffen haben, hier auch in der Praxis stattfinden. Zum Beispiel eben die Frage der Finanzierung oder auch die Frage nach Sicherheit. Besonders berührt hat mich die Aussage von Lotfullah über eine kollaborative Gemeinschaftsarbeit, die aus dem Schicksal der Journalisten und Journalistinnen eine Möglichkeit formt, um weiterhin ihrem Beruf nachzukommen und den Menschen in Afghanistan zu dienen. Ich finde, das hat er ganz treffend beschrieben. Das war's für diesen Augenblick hier bei Media for Peace. Lass gern eine Bewertung da und ich wünsche dir einen schönen Tag.
Media for Peace, der Podcast für friedensorientierten Journalismus. eine Produktion des Media Lab Bayern. Media for Peace ist eine Kooperation mit dem DTEC BW, Zentrum für Digitalisierungs- und Technologieforschung der Bundeswehr und der Universität der Bundeswehr München.